Good evening and welcome to Vonday Radio. And in this broadcast, we will be discussing Biden's Dark Winter, which is a prism to look at current events. And it is a great pleasure to be joined once again by the indefatigable Tim Kelly of Powers and Principalities and our interesting times. My apologies. So welcome, Tim.
Oh, thank you for having me back on.
Well, we last spoke in October, and that was with Dr. Jesse Russell, and we were on the brink of both the American election and also the winter in the Northern Hemisphere. And during some of those presidential debates, a term that President-elect Biden was throwing out quite a lot was the dark winter. We are going into a dark winter, he kept on repeating, and he's been repeating that recently. And so he was definitely, you know, selling a message of hope and change and unity and healing there. And I suggest using this phrase as a prism to look at current events, because when we saw him use that phrase, I think it's a mistake to see that as him making some kind of prediction. It was actually a threat, which is now being carried out. So I'm speaking to you now from Plague Island, where we're currently dealing with a mutant form of the dreaded COVID-19. But the unprecedented quarantining of healthy people continues. So, Tim, how does the Biden's dark winter look from your perspective?
Well, as you said, it was a phrase that Joe Biden used in at least in one debate. I think he warned that, you know, that we were about to go into a dark winter, echoing concerns about, you know, of the public, of our so-called public health experts, about the increased fatalities related to COVID-19. He said, we're about to go into a dark winter, and, you know, scaring everybody. And of course, this was in contrast to his opponent, President Trump's, I guess, more optimistic outlook. Being the incumbent, I guess you can expect that. About, you know, regarding the vaccines, which is problematic in and of itself, the so-called vaccine at the time, warp speed. And so it was basically, it was him saying, if you don't elect me, things are going to get worse. And of course, the dark winter, it's an interesting phrase. I think Whitney Webb wrote an article talking about that. was an operation, a drill that was run by the U.S. government some 20 years before 9/11, regarding I think it was smallpox outbreak. And then, of course, that year, 2001, we had the anthrax attacks. And she's written about how this is sort of these events. A lot of people are who look into these things are aware that a lot of these events are drilled. Like 9/11 was drilled several times, and then they're played out in reality. At least they're reported as being playing out in reality. And of course, we have event 201. We have the Rockefeller lockstep from 10 years ago, foreseeing an outbreak, an influenza outbreak. I think Event 201 actually was a coronavirus that was foreseen by the World Health Organization, Johns Hopkins, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, the Imperial College of London, the very institutions that spearheaded the response to this outbreak that did occur in early 2020. So again, him using that phrase just put a lot of fear in the people, because fear factors generally a lot in the politics, especially in 2020, with the pandemic, which in my opinion is for the most part fake, meaning there is no increased mortality or morbidity. Everything's well within the 5 to 10 year norm. And so if you have that, how do you have a pandemic? But they changed the definition of a pandemic to the point where you don't even need an increase in the mortality rate. You just need an increase of reported infections. And as many are aware, and all too many aren't, is that their definition of infection is just a positive test from a test which is bogus, the PCR test. The positive, you know, the false positive rates are really high, just a question of how many thresholds you run. And if you run more than 35, you get completely unreliable results. And of course, here in the United States, CDC has instructed labs to do more than 35 cycles, which produces a false positive, which run up the infection rates, because we have a lot of terms where they conflate infection and cases with people who aren't even sick. In fact, the vast majority of cases are people who aren't even symptomatic, but it boosts the numbers, you know. And there's a lot of reason why that is, because the way the funding has been set up with the CARES Act, federal relief funding, is that hospitals, institutions are rewarded if they report COVID cases, you know, so they're getting more money if they report COVID cases, as opposed to if people were just getting the regular flu or pneumonia or just going in, you know, even gunshot victims and heart attack people are being put down as being COVID victims. So the fraud is rampant in this thing, but it's maintained a level of fear, which changed the politics, which enabled much of the election fraud or controversy that we've experienced here in the past couple of months, which is now in its closing days, as Joe Biden is set to be inaugurated president on January 20th. Of course, as I've kind of joked, is we have 20,000 troops converging on Washington, D.C. to provide security for the inauguration of one of the most popular president ever. So go figure. So there's that. And of course, we had some of the hysterics, the histrionics, in response to the events on January 6th. January 6th is when Congress reads in the Electoral College vote from the various Electoral Colleges that are done on December 14th. That's where our electoral system works. We don't vote for the president. We vote for electors who elect the president. And most states have an at-large system where people vote for electors. And so there's a lot of controversy because of the in response to COVID, allegedly, many states unconstitutionally illegally change their election laws. Mail-in balloting without any signature requirements, IDs, not even postage dates required. Of course, this opened up a lot of opportunity for fraud, as the evidence suggests there is a lot of fraud in this election. And so we had these late-night turnaround or early-morning turnaround, or in the succeeding days, where Biden turned was able to close in and defeat Donald Trump in these key states, six or seven states, which gave him the presidency. And so we've had 2 months of we haven't had any investigations. We've had a lot of evidence accumulated, thousands of sworn affidavits, data analysis, computer anomalies with electronic voting service with Dominion, which actually ties to the George Soros Open Society Foundation, the Quantum Fund, I think, has investments or is a part owner of Dominion. So there's a question whether or not there's a lot of electronic voting fraud, and what they couldn't get with the fraud with Dominion machines, they filled the gap with a lot of these mail-in ballots. We had I think it was a 30-fold increase in mail-in balloting this year. And a significant drop in how many ballots were spoiled, which should be the opposite, which suggests voter fraud. And of course, we have all the videotaping and evidence of this stuff. But none of this evidence was entertained by any courts. Courts threw out these cases on procedural grounds, and no evidence was ever presented. We've had this curious state where the Republicans themselves have allowed this to happen, because this fraud couldn't have been allowed to succeed without collusion or participation or cooperation of the Republican Party, which speaks volumes about the true nature of our two-party political system here. And but this led up to these events in January 6th, where all this controversy, you had as many as over 100 members of the House of Representatives and 12 senators willing to challenge the Electoral College vote. And this threatened to make it a contingent election or throw it back to the states. I'm not getting into the legal details of that. But so then you had this convergence of hundreds of thousands of pro-Trump supporters converge, or anti-election fraud, who knows what their motivations were, but they converged in Washington, D.C. in a very orderly and peaceful protest, in either to put pressure on Congress or to support those in Congress who are indeed challenging the Electoral College, which is legal. It's constitutional. There are grounds for this. And the senators who opposed it were opposing it based on an 1887 law. So it's all legal. But then in the afternoon, just when they were about to read in the votes, and I think Arizona was being challenged, their Electoral College was being challenged, the Capitol was stormed, as they say. And what happened was you had maybe 1,000 or so gather around the Capitol building. From what the evidence suggests is the people, a few hundred were let into the building, and a few roamed the halls. And there are a few, as you can say, activists. Yeah, one guy dressed like just in a buffalo head. Some guy stormed into some of the chambers. One guy sat on Nancy Pelosi's desk, put his feet up on the desk and protest. And this was the media transformed us into a insurrection or a riot. And this stopped the Electoral College vote from being challenged. Congress was adjourned. They came back in the evening after calm had been reestablished or order, and they just read in the votes without any challenges, and any idea of challenging the vote, looking into election fraud was canceled. They didn't do it. And lo and behold, Joe Biden becomes president. So who benefits from that? So that's where it stands now. The idea that this was a riot or insurrection is absurd. I'm not even a riot. I guess you could construe that. There's a very minor riot if you call that a riot. But now many of the participants, hundreds of the participants, are now being charged by our Justice Department with sedition, some say terrorism, which is ridiculous, because or even insurrection, because sedition, insurrection. If what were, I mean, if they were staging some sort of coup, what plan was there to take power? Was the guy with the buffalo head going to take power, dislodge Nancy Pelosi from her position of power? There's no evidence of that, but they're just now we have a government now. By the way, this is still a Trump's Justice Department pressing these charges, and so now it's
Right, right.
they're just posing for the camera at this point. And they're, I do think this that the idea that what we're seeing now is this political theater is there to remove from the scene, take off the table any investigation or any entertainment in the election fraud, and also this also became the grounds for a second impeachment of the president. Last year they had an impeachment, it failed, and they did this rapid impeachment of Donald Trump without any committee hearings or investigations, and charging him with incitement for the insurrection, even though there was no insurrection, nor is there any evidence of incitement. His speech called for a peaceful, calm protest. So we have bills of impeachment being delivered to the Senate, incitement for an insurrection, even though there's no incitement and there was no insurrection. And the Senate's not going to look at it until Donald Trump leaves office, which means you can't impeach a president who's no longer president. He's no longer president. But again, it's all political theater, because this is an attempt. I heard someone comment say this was an attempt to not so much impeach Donald Trump, but impeach what he represented
Right.
in very crude fashion. It's a war on populism. It's a war on the people who represented Donald Trump. I mean, if you just look at it, this Donald Trump, I think as late as December 31st, George Gallup did a poll, and he was the most admired American on December, as early as December, as late as December 30th, last week or 2 weeks ago. All of a sudden, the narrative changed, where he's a disgraced president being chased out of Washington, D.C., about to be impeached. And all this is just because they were able to spin this story about what occurred on Capitol Hill, which takes election fraud completely off the table. And at the same time, it weakens the populist push that was the anti-neoliberal or anti-neoconservative wing in the Republican Party. But oddly enough, again, Donald Trump is still the most admired man in the country, for better or for worse, as late as December 30th. And now, if you watch our mainstream media, he's reviled and disgraced. And but we also have a media establishment now in the process of doing this, of ignoring all the election fraud, covering everything up, then helping the Democratic Party and the establishment spin this narrative of an insurrection. They've lost all credibility, at least in more than half the American public. So I don't know what the result of this is going to be. I don't know. They've really blown their credibility in a huge section of the public in this effort to stage this coup as a color revolution. And you can't take these events that occurred just last week. They're all part of the same operation that began last March, when the this fake pandemic was operation was implemented. And it goes into the riots of the spring with the Black Lives Matter and Antifa protests. That was a real insurrection. One thing that really bothers people now, I think that's really striking to normal people, is the rank hypocrisy and histrionics of the whole thing, where you have this relatively mild affair on Capitol Hill. There was reported fatalities, but all the deaths, when I can understand, were all done, meted out by the Capitol Police. I mean, the protesters didn't hurt anybody. There's one case of a reporter where a police officer was hit with a fire extinguisher, but the details are fuzzy on that. I don't know about that. But what you have now is they're using this as a pretext to almost like a witch hunt against anyone who dare look at election fraud, even if it's legal. There's an effort to remove Senator Ted Cruz and Josh Hawley from the Senate just for thinking about challenging the vote, even though they didn't. Some people are saying that even every member of the House of Representatives who supported challenging the electoral college should be expelled from the House of Representatives. And this isn't even being done by the government. You have this corporate effort now where, like Josh Hawley, the senator who was challenging it, a hotel is denying him a room there for a fundraiser. He lost his book deal. There's some people talking that Cruz and Josh Hawley should be expelled from the Senate for doing something that's completely illegal, by the way. Mm-hmm. Even if you bought in the narrative of what occurred down there was a riot and was actually dangerous, you can't pin that on Senator Cruz or Josh Hawley, nor is there any investigation into whether or not whatever violence occurred was done by agent provocateurs, which seems to be the case. Those who broke the glass things have been identified as Antifa or leftist protesters, which is, you get a mob of hundreds of thousands, that can easily be done. So that's where we are. They're creating a political environment where all dissent is now insurrection, is a coup. When you have a sitting president who's being accused of sedition for simply challenging the results of a obviously fraudulent election.
That was an excellent overview. Thank you very much, Tim. The inability here, as you say, to separate whatever happened on Capitol, even if it was a riot, or as they label it and describe it, why not leave that to one side? Okay, can we have an investigation into the events in November? As Ted Cruz was saying before this, that 40% plus of the American public think there was voter fraud. So for the sake of the Republic, let's have an investigation. And if there wasn't voter fraud, then they will accept Biden won. That seems a very sort of rational way forward for me. But what you saw, I think, when the courts rejected looking at the evidence, was then reported by the media as there not being any evidence, and that's why the courts throughout the case. The case is so, it was quite foggy to understand. And of course, those people who, as you say, are feeling the full force of the law for this trespassing on Capitol Hill are also victims of a psyop from the Q side of things. Trump really only has himself to blame for getting to this situation with his federal mandate, sanctioning of state lockdowns, and then all sorts of different things, allowing Bill Barr to stay in Attorney General for so long, his Homeland Security head, Chad Wolf saying white supremacy was the number one threat. It's like his followers were set up, and this is where some people allege was Trump some kind of honey trap to destroy, to discredit this idea of MAGA, of populism. Are we talking about here a complete theatrical production, a dialectical trap? Because if you look into the origins of something like Q, it's very interesting. There's quite compelling circumstantial suggestion, at least, that deep state figures like General Paul E. Vallely, General Flynn, and some of these operatives definitely intersect with the QAnon sort of so-called army of Northern Virginia and it's what you could call the sort of right wing of the deep state.
Yeah, I think General Vallely, he's the one that co-wrote that psych warfare doctrine with Colonel Aquino.
That's right, yes.
About, I think that was the 80s.
Mind war,
and this is the type of psyop that it operate. Q, some people think it's an FBI operation. FBI does run operations like this, so it's not a wild conspiracy theory. Thinking this is just a version of COINTELPRO, back in the 60s. And just modified for today's circumstances, but the idea of wishing, hoping for some sort of white hat within the system to come in and ride in at the last minute, even to this day, I think people are suggesting that the presence of 20,000 troops is actually a sting orchestrated by Donald Trump. At the last minute, they're going to turn around and arrest all the evildoers, and the Q fantasy lives on. We'll see, I guess, after Wednesday. But yeah, it seemed to be that when Donald Trump gave that speech, he told people to go protest. He did say peaceful. He didn't any of that, but he did set them up for this. And you would think that if Donald Trump was privy to these crimes that were committed during the election, that he would criminally prosecute them. And that's just something that curiously wasn't done.
Instead, he just went and got off.
Yeah, he went to play golf, or he litigated in these things. He litigated in the courts, and you have the media. I think it's interesting, it's telling that the media could black this out and still have roughly half the public and the vast majority of Republicans think that there was fraud. It shows that their blackout isn't quite as effective as it maybe would have been at one time. That there's so many diverse sources of information that they can't keep a plug on it.
But, well, I was actually. Following the election here in the middle of the night, and I was following on some sort of conservative streams, but also mainstream ones. And when the polling stations just shut in the middle of the night in all the swing states after Trump had won Florida and Texas, instantly my intuition was that okay, this is really weird. and then the holdout over the next few days, the kind of extension of things. And the agitation about counting every vote, whereby these swing states then flipped to create this sort of fait accompli, and then make Trump look like the one that was attacking our democracy. The whole thing was just so obvious. But it's not about the process, it's about raw power.
Yeah, power has its own rules of logic.
Yeah. It's speaking from the United Kingdom, where we are in the teeth of this dark winter, maybe we're getting a kind of preview of what may be coming to a theatre near you across the pond. In the midst of this, we're in lockdown 3.0, and you're just seeing the oligarchs really putting their foot on the accelerator. So we had this, as I say, this alleged this mutant strain. That's very normal for viruses to mutate. It actually means usually that they're becoming less lethal as they sort of, as a rather morbid phrase, kind of burn through the tinder wood. They don't want to kill people. They want to have a healthy host to then transmit onto other hosts. You and I speaking right now currently have the Spanish flu virus. The influenza virus, but it just doesn't, it's non-harmful because it's mutated that many times. But anyway, this was the pretext behind this third lockdown here, and it was very interesting because the policies are driven by these shadowy committees. It's much more centralized, obviously, than in the States. You've got Neil Ferguson, who you're familiar with, scuttled back onto the scene as part of this Nerve Tag group, which is the new emerging respiratory viruses threat assessments group, and they have been giving the government advice or directions about this new mutation. And there was a BBC radio show where one of the members of this committee of NERVTAG, Professor Robert Dingle, in December said something very interesting. He said he was quite surprised by the government's incredibly drastic reaction to what he called a bland assessment about this new strain, and expressed surprise that the government had acted in such a draconian fashion and broadcast the entire world. I think Johnson actually called us Plague Island. And suddenly you had all these, you know, all countries closing their borders to entries from the United Kingdom. The world's press was full of this mutant strain to come out of Britain. Why would a government create that panic following what this professor called a bland assessment? And I think that little vignette just tells us a little bit that particularly the health secretary here, Matt Hancock, was looking to take news of something like that and exaggerate it. So the question is, why was he doing that? Who's he taking orders from? And why would he look to create hysteria? Because in a real pandemic, where people are dropping dead, you don't see the government looking to inflame hysteria. You see the opposite. You see them looking to reduce it because everyone's seeing dead bodies all over the place, scared to go out and so on. And so you actually have the government looking to calm the population. But here we have the exact opposite, where they're saying just psychopathic things like act as if you have the virus and stay apart so that we can be together. The psyop has really been ratcheted up here. I would say that yes, UK hospitals are in crisis at the moment. That's undeniable. However, they're in crisis every winter. That does tend to be the case. But what's interesting is actual total hospital occupancy is normal or even low for this time of year. Here's the key thing. The NHS, this is our you know, National Socialized Medicine Health Service, its number of beds has actually reduced gradually in the last few years. There were 240,000 beds in the year 2000, and then last year in 2019, there were under 165,000. That's a huge drop, and there was a further drop of 10,000 beds this year because of the to allow for the socialist distancing and everything else. So when they say the NHS is overwhelmed, that's not the same thing as the NHS being well overwhelmed 3 years ago, for example, because there are less beds. But you can see how it creates the media pictures of very distressed situations in hospitals, needs of having to switch into. It's quite, you know, obviously we've got the disappearance of flu this season. There's all of this going on, and the media is vying to outdo each other over its hysteria, this kind of COVIDianity, this COVID religion. So that's sort of how it looks from here. I did see quite something pretty ominous from New York. Assembly Bill A416 relates to the removal of cases, contacts and carriers of communicable diseases who are potentially dangerous to the public health. It seems like open season, Tim, for God knows what.
Yeah, that was a bill submitted in New York. Basically, any disease, potentially disease carrier, potential threat, we're all potential threats, you know, and it can be indefinitely detained. You don't even have to be symptomatic. Again, this is the medical dictatorship that's being imposed on the cover of a public health crisis, which they have created through a false narrative. And you see how the media plays up these narratives, showing busy ICU units or you know, just stories of busy hospitals. Even though, well, what's the context? Aren't they always busy this time of year? You know, shutting things down itself creates the narrative. The effect proves the cause, and that's one of the reasons why you had the lockdown occur and continuing is they have to create the aura or the atmosphere of a crisis. It's the same reason why you have social distancing requirements, mask wearing. These things are there to remind people that there's a problem, because otherwise people aren't dropping dead. And how do you maintain a crisis atmosphere in that environment? And so it's all done. You know, who are they taking orders from? Well, ultimately, it's from, you know, international banking, high finance, the powers that be, the World Economic Forum, the powers that organization represents. And you can see that in the fact that the World Economic Forum played a role in Event 201. And Bill Gates is a participant in the World Economic Forum. And that Klaus Schwab, who is the director of the World Economic Forum, has come up with a plan for our new normal, which is the Great Reset to deal with this. And this all this is being done under the pretext of a global pandemic, which in all intents and purposes doesn't exist. And they themselves admitted that this is a crisis that they're indeed exploiting. And now they openly talk about it. They talk about, you know, 2030, the new normal, you don't own anything. And of course, they're by shutting down the economy and immiserating the world's population and creating a situation where we won't own anything and they'll own everything, because someone's going to own it, control it, and allocate things and decide how resources are used. And it's going to be the small little group of people of elite billionaires who think they possess the wisdom, the knowledge, and the birthright to control and enslave humanity. And they say as much. It all goes back to that Luciferian, you know, aspiration to be a god. And that's what they, and you see that with the artificial intelligence and the transhumanist technology or program that's being implemented, again, under the cover of a global pandemic. It's, it all goes, I mean, if you want the origins of this, is Catherine Austin Fitz has a publication. She runs the Solari report, and she did a report called The State of Our Currency. And she talks about the origin of this goes back to, basically, it's a currency warfare, control of the world. Mm. And currency itself is a subset of governance. And the dollar system, which had, you know, been dollar is the world's reserve currency, which has been that way for several decades now, was ending. And there's recently that there's been challenges to that with China and Russia, the Belt and Road initiative, and efforts of the developing countries to break out of the dollar, de-dollarize. And the pandemic created the pretext to sort of extend the life of the dollar while they manage or organize sort of the institution of a new currency, which isn't even a currency. It's sort of a digitized currency, which is a credit system, social credit system, as they establish, you know, the globe as a one big company store. And that's what you see with this globalization effort. And there's a lot of wrangling, geopolitical wrangling within this, because you know, China is a very old civilization. They may have their own agenda within this group, but China's mm-hmm. definitely a part of it, because China was a big part of setting up the globalization process with their industrialization. You know, in the past 30 years, it was all part of the deindustrialization of the West. And so now we have the in late 2019, there was a decision taken again to start to bail out the economy, because you had this crisis with the with the debt. This is they couldn't roll it over again, and they, to avoid a run on the dollar, they had to collapse the economy. And the pretext for that was the global shutdown, supposedly to contain this pandemic, but it shut down all the economies at the same time. And this would extend the life of the dollar. At the same time, it creates a pretext to impose what they call the new normal, you know, Build Back Better, this initiative, which relies on this artificial intelligence infrastructure that they're trying to, that they're building as we speak. And this what, I mean, he openly talks, Klaus Schwab talks about how this will pretty much end any notions of privacy. It's total surveillance. Because it's this technocratic idea of controlling everyone through monitoring, as opposed to like economic forces of supply, demand, and pricing, free pricing system. But within the system, there's no freedom. It's, everyone's a slave, because we're all part of a vast global social credit system where our behavior is monitored, and the amount of rewards we get is based on our behavior and our compliance with the system. And you can see that being built in with the under the pretext of containment with the virus, because contact tracing and these things, whether or not you can travel depends on whether or not you have a negative test, or you get regular testing, or you agree to getting the so-called vaccine.
Yeah, I'd like to conduct a sort of brief survey of the global situation, because I think that can be quite insightful to looking at where this is all going. And I think that one gets the impression, certainly if you make the mistake of viewing the mainstream media coverage of this so-called global pandemic, but every country is locking down, and as I say, the unprecedented quarantining of healthy people is actually completely normal, and this is something we should be doing to be in lockstep with other societies. But actually, that is the reality the media present you, or the image they present you, which is different to reality. As I mentioned on our last program, that the strongest argument against the kind of, you know, COVID pandemic skeptic point of view that we are expressing is the global nature of the response to this virus outbreak. But let's just, for example, look at Germany, which currently is experiencing an uptick in deaths after not really having one in the spring. So if you look at, you know, how a virus works epidemiologically, it's always the same. It's this the Gompertz curve where it hits and then basically gets the vulnerable, sad to say, but that's the fact of life. And then works its way through the younger population, the less vulnerable population, and keeps mutating until, you know, it's in benign forms, basically. And Germany looks like it delayed that during the spring for it to now happen. Incidentally, all these measures, as we've said, the whole lie is based on the case-demic, on the PCR test. That is the linchpin of this whole construct. Well, there's several other lies, actually, isn't there? There's the lie of asymptomatic transmission. And in Germany, any opposition to they're locking down very hard at the moment. Any opposition to the government line has been unequivocally equated with the far right. So that's the way that they are pressing down on any dissent.
That's part. I think it's part of the reason why you had this interpretation or narrative spun regarding our protests on January 6th at the Capitol building. Is it insurrection? Yep. Because they're anticipating similar protests at various state capitals about lockdowns and some other so-called containment measures. And if you can just sort of smear all those participants as far right-wing, white supremacist hate groups opposing the government insurrection, it's a way to undermine credibility in the eyes of the public, these people who are protesting because their livelihoods are being destroyed. And they just smear them all. Yeah. Look, they're the same as the people who tried to burn the Capitol, that sort of thing. Yeah.
And obviously in Germany, that's a very effective weapon.
Yeah.
The other lie that I was trying to recall was this lie of reinfection after having had the virus and then recovered from it, based on sort of two or three cases in the world, apparently. And again, it would go against all the science whereby the body produces antibodies against a virus and is immune. So anyway, the Urdenker group, lateral thinkers, German lockdown skeptics, headed by an IT professional from Stuttgart, have been under surveillance by the Bundeswehrsangschutz, Germany's MI5 / FBI, and they were hit with water cannons during protests in December. And there's been a real crackdown in Germany on those very large protests we were seeing. And as I say, a depiction of them as representing the kind of noxious far right. And then Antifa have actually been writing graffiti about the encouraging everyone to obey the government, and also making claims about the imminent downfall of capitalism. So they've obviously got alternative agendas there, but ulterior motives. But they've scrawled personal threats of violence to those who were not absolutely convinced of the decrees of Angela Merkel. So it's quite scary to see there. But I do suppose the Germans are rather susceptible to this, and there is a conformity in the Teutonic spirit that, you know, certain historical figures took advantage of, shall we say, where they all get marching in one direction, and then their hostility to the out-group, to anyone who you know, points out the emperor has no clothes or doesn't conform, is pretty strong. But unlike here, there's very little dithering about the enforcement. Simple threats like masks on or we close down the area are preferred. And then they close it down anyway. So that's Germany, for example. In Japan, it's interesting. The disease killed more people in autumn, winter than spring. Okay, so it's a delayed thing there. But more Japanese died from 25 other causes in 2020. COVID-19 accounted for only 0.3% of all deaths. There were seven times as many suicides and 40 times as many flu and pneumonia deaths. So it looks like they're still counting flu deaths there. Japan was also one of the countries without excess mortality caused by COVID-19. But Japan attracted world notice for neither imposing a lockdown nor obsessively testing asymptomatic people. That's what creates this whole hysteria. One of their correspondents wrote, encouraging people with mild or no symptoms to take PCR tests would have revealed nothing but resulted in isolating false positive cases. I mean, that's such a logical... I can't believe that hasn't been taken in my own country and elsewhere, but there you go. And then finally, I was just going to point to Colombia, because it's interesting to look at the third world, where... They just can't afford to lock down. people will not be able to put food on the table for their family very rapidly. Interestingly, in Colombia, there's a sort of superstructure of rules about lockdown and everything and having to wear masks, but people just ignore it. It's just not enforced. And the symptoms of COVID, interestingly, are quite similar to symptoms of some of the sort of tropical insect diseases they have out there. They don't have the infrastructure for mass testing. So basically, when you kind of ignore the problem, it goes away.
Yeah, just like it did here when we had the orgy of riots in the spring here after the George Floyd incident. He's the man who died of a drug overdose in custody of the police, and they blamed the death on police, which is not something people know that now, but no one's taking back all the rhetoric. And all the damage they did. But for those few weeks, COVID went away in the eyes of the media. No one talked about the pandemic. Everyone talked about racial justice. And whatever the media is focusing on goes away. Just like, where are the terrorists? You know, I thought it was a long war against terrorism that started in 2001. Well, where are they? I mean, did they all die of COVID?
Well, it's been pretty bad in France and so on. But certainly with the American Empire, not so much.
Well, yeah, the Islamic terrorism that was supposedly the global threat. Another global threat, right?
So, you know. Global threats require global solutions.
Yes.
I mean, look, the virus is not unprecedented, but the draconian societal shutdowns are.
Yeah, your point is these measures make no sense from a cost-benefit analysis. It's self-evident.
And that analysis is never presented to us. This is what really stinks to high heaven. Who would have expected Western democracies, so-called, to mimic authoritarian China? Never before in human history have entire populations been put under effective house arrest, told what they can, when they can go out, where to, for how long, how many people they can meet, which businesses can stay open to sell designated goods and provide listed services. Yet after a year of this extreme experiment, data from around the world show that the spread of the supposed pandemic correlates more with geography, demography, and seasonality than lockdown stringency and sequencing. Who would have thought?
Yeah.
So this is... The situation.
The thing is that what this reveals is the malevolence of those who presume to govern us. I mean, they're not that stupid. I mean, a lot of people say, "Oh, they're just stupid politicians." No, they're not that stupid. They're malevolent. Yes.
Well, we have this idea of this bungling Boris, referring to our prime minister. So a lot of the sort of mainstream lockdown skeptics use this, and they might be being tactical and just using that narrative so they can at least get airing on the BBC and the mainstream media. If they are, then maybe that's understandable. But clearly, that as I mentioned from that vignette of the professor who witnessed the government take a bland scientific assessment and massively amplify it and precipitate a kind of world panic, they are there acting with malevolent intent. As Joe Atwill has said on your program, the events of last year have now exposed nearly the entire political class as malevolent.
Mm-hmm. The media is being completely controlled, and this is the it's again, it's exposed the true nature of the system, which is perhaps a benefit, an unintended benefit that they've bestowed upon humanity by revealing themselves, because they could have, you know, kept the boiler simmering for a little while longer. But for some reason, they decided to accelerate it. And I think why it was suddenly accelerated speaks to the currency wars that were going on. And there was they saw it as an opportunity to usher in this new system.
And the devil's running out of time.
Yeah.
If we talk about their master, who they're taking orders from, he is always in a panic because he knows his time is numbered before the second coming of our Lord. And so, you know, clearly he's aware of the outcome of perhaps the prophecies of Fatima and so on, and is really looking to accelerate things and is making all sorts of kind of obvious mistakes while doing so. But one thing I do take confidence from, it's something you mentioned before, Tim, I want to repeat it really, which is that if we think back to last spring, and obviously, as you say, we had the Black Lives Matter protests, which were a break in the insanity, the COVID insanity. But the if you remember back then, the lockdowns weren't so much lifted as disintegrated.
Yes.
And there is a, as much as, you know, the normie has absorbed a lot of this side, there is a common sense whereby, as I say, they don't know anyone who's died of the virus, and they don't see it, you know, and so they if I go out to the high street now, we're only allowed to go shopping for essential things, but people are still, you know, going up and down and mingling, and they're sort of rolling their eyes and complying, but they think that the control system just disintegrates. Hitler in his bunker during the fall of the Reich, kind of issuing commands to armies, ghost armies that only exist on the in his fevered imagination on the on the map.
So you're breaking up. I can't hear you.
Sorry, can you hear me, Tim?
Yeah, you broke up there for a second. You were remarking about Hitler in the bunker.
Oh, I ended on that point. Really, okay. I just said that I see parallels there because they're increasingly kind of histrionic commands being issued can have less and less of an effect on the enforcement of these ludicrous measures.
Yeah, I mean, this covers not only the pandemic, but also our election here, where the rhetoric coming from politicians and their news reports are completely in contrast to reality. There's a contradiction here.
So people, the lie is just so big.
It's so big, and you could have an Orwellian effect where, you know, people just have to accept it. You know, 2 + 2 = 5. Okay, I accept it. Just keep it up. You're wearing us down. But just even how the reaction to the pandemic were is what was at worst a regular flu season. They've turned it into this civilizational destroying, planetary destructive event, and all their responses are heroic. They have to do this. They're saving lives, and people just aren't buying it anymore. It's all the difference. Like, we have these buffoonish governors. Like there's the governor of New York, Andrew Cuomo, wins an Emmy Award for his performance. He's writing books about how great he is, and how he's treated on CNN or MSNBC. But then there's the reality of Andrew Cuomo. People kind of see him as a kind of a buffoonish gorilla, kind of a goon. And there's the vain Gavin Newsom of California. You have the governor of Michigan, this Daffy. It's something. So the political class is being, I mean, I think in the eyes of at least in America, of probably more than half the public is being completely they're losing all legitimacy. And the same with the mainstream press, the corporate media. And how do you maintain the narrative control if you're losing all legitimacy? There's going to be a good 40% that is just going to go along, I think, no matter what happens. But if a good 10, 15, 20% start speaking up against it and actively start resisting it, it can't maintain itself. So now I think they're in a panic mode to accelerate this and keep it all together.
In the autumn, we started seeing some of the you could call them kind of center newspapers here, becoming pretty lockdown skeptic and really questioning the ongoing strangulation of the economy. And from what I've read into this, some very powerful people, particularly real estate owners in the City of London, who derive a lot of income from office rents and so on, were putting, have contacts, and they were putting pressure on those contacts. So the idea that the elite is this kind of monolithic entity is perhaps mistaken. There are factions there.
And we had the governor of New York here, Andrew Cuomo, you know, a very important state, because that's where Wall Street is. And of course, New Yorkers think that they're the most important people in the world. But he said that it's time to open up the economy.
I was going to ask your thoughts on, because there are two pathways here, aren't there? And I'd like you to just, you know, get your analysis of both of those. So one is this idea that they're just going to go hell for leather now and just break the currency and, you know, bring about a serious disintegration of the economy and society to then dissolve and then coagulate to then build their you know, Agenda 2030, Great Reset, Smart City, their concentration camp without tears, as Aldous Huxley called it, or that's a kind of fast burn, or now that one of the objectives, getting Biden in, getting Trump out, is achieved, that they go for the slow burn and they actually look to alleviate some of the restrictions. You're seeing that with Lori Lightfoot, the Chicago tyrant. They're talking about that. Cuomo, as you say, in here in the UK, they're saying the you know that, the lockdowns are something like they, there's analysis saying they're causing a lot of damage. All this just stuff that you would not have seen a couple of months ago is now being sort of tempted. Is you know, is that a pressure valve thing, or are they, is that, does that indicate where they're going to go with this?
Yeah, maybe Klaus Schwab is a bit too ambitious, and I don't think Klaus Schwab runs the world. I mean, he's a front man, and nor does Bill Gates really. But there's a sense where there was too much revelation this past year, and
maybe on the front of it.
And so now there's too much truth being shown, too much exposure. And if they pull it back a bit, people will be thankful, and also they'll just get back to living. And then, you know, the mass of people will stop looking into it again, because their life isn't as disrupted, and maybe they've doesn't anticipate as much resistance to it. Maybe they're sensing something. They've got their pulse that there's real resistance. You have sheriffs, you know, throughout this country, sheriff departments, which are constitutional offices, simply aren't enforcing these laws. In California, there's five sheriff departments who are just ignoring the governor. So he, you know, I mean, and he's been there, and there's a recall effort. I think the law in California is 1.5 million signatures to get a recall election going. They have over 1 million now. And so the opposite of that occurring, of a governor being recalled in the wake of this lockdown, maybe they don't want that. They're saying that the politics is changing. Maybe they fear, you know, real retribution. You know, there's maybe people like me and a million others saying, it's time to bring these people up on charges. It's time for a criminal investigation. Maybe they've aggregated the stuff and found there's too many people talking about criminal charges, you know, against George Soros, against in his interest, his organizations. I've argued that, you know, really, if you had a real sovereign government, you know, there'd be an investigation into these foundations, into these like the Melinda Gates Foundation, into what type of operation is the Imperial College of London. It's part of a criminal enterprise. You know, going into the banking and the finances, like the Rothschilds, and that what they're engaging is high criminality. And if there's a general awareness of this among the public, it could build momentum, you know, for a real investigation, a criminal prosecution of these elite. I think it's a fantasy at this point. I don't see any acknowledgement part of the political class for that. But maybe they sense an awareness out there that they had gone too far. It speaks to the fact that there are not gods. You know, they're not omnipotent, nor are they omniscient. They make mistakes. And maybe this was a bridge too far. And this is why you're seeing some of this commenting that maybe we need to reopen up now. And of course, it is convenient that Trump is gone, Biden's president. And if they do reopen up, Biden's there to take credit for it, you know.
Yeah, I think he'll still continue his dark winter for a little bit longer. get everyone wearing the muzzles, try and make that a permanent thing. But
well, there's the vaccine agenda.
Let's go on to that. I was just going to say that, in the last few months, it was disturbing to see how recklessly some of these governors were decimating their own economies and societies. It was like they knew something we didn't, and they didn't seem to care about getting reelected. It's quite disturbing, really. Again, in Germany, there were all the it's a federal system there, and all the, I can't remember what they're called, the kind of the land, the different federal leaders were all very skeptical, saying, do you really want to cause this kind of auto demolition? They all came out and built a lockdown. It's like they were kind of like Satan took them into the high places and showed them the kingdoms of the world if they would bow down and worship him. And unlike our Lord, who said, thou shalt only worship the Lord thy God, they said yes. So disturbing that, but as you say, maybe they're just turning down the heat on the frog a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, some retrenchment. So it's tough to predict because we don't know what's occurring at the meta level. When these decisions are taken, obviously what's being, retailed to the public of what reality is isn't true. So we have to sort of,
they leave crumbs.
Yeah, to leave crumbs. And who knows, that's why I always shy away from predicting, being a doomsayer or anything, because these things, like I said, the current crisis isn't based on any particular reality. Now, that said, the economic system that we did have, it was unsustainable. It's designed to be unsustainable. And so they need periodic crises and crashes to reconsolidate, acquire more power. That's what these things are about. The system is designed to be unstable because within the instability, they can rebuild, they can have coups, they can have wars, and whether it's population reduction or asset acquisition, confiscation. That's how you have to look at this. And that's what, if you look at, like I said, the broader picture of this whole lockdown thing is just an attempt to crash the Main Street economy, so banking and financial institutions can buy everything up for a song once everything crashes. And that's evidently what's occurring. Catherine Austin Fitz has done studies where the major riots all had Federal Reserve banks in them in the United States last summer.
It's a real estate acquisition plan.
Yeah, real estate acquisition plan. And she has the expertise in finance and also the software that tracks this stuff. And that's the pattern she sees. And that's one thing where it's not destroyed by lockdown. You have mobs destroy it, by looting stores. Yeah. And all this real estate is there. You can buy up at a very low price. And if you have the juice or the influence to declare global pandemics, and any investigation, if you wanted to look at it going back into last fall, is just investigate the financial positions of Bill Gates or Jeff Bezos. I'm sure you're gonna find evidence of foreknowledge, and they can believe it. They weren't taken unawares by the lockdown like everyone else was. They were in a position,
Republican senator, didn't you? Insider trading.
Yeah. And that's, and we hear about that. We don't hear about the big guys doing it,
Right. Yeah, exactly. They're just puppets, follow the strings. Mm-hmm. So let's get on to the pokey. I think, as a scientist was saying to Robert Kennedy Jr., it's not actually a vaccine, but it's messenger RNA strand that doesn't stop transmission, but is actually a treatment. It's not a living biological system, a fragment or a less lethal form of the virus, which is then injected into the body to produce the antibodies, the immunity. But it's a physical technology in the size of a molecular package. I don't really understand the science, but he said that the use of the term vaccine is unconscionable and part of the public communication manipulation. Mm-hmm. It is a mechanical device inserted into the human system to activate the cell as a pathogen production site. Interestingly, news came out today from Norway. This is in the mainstream press, Bloomberg. Norway has expressed increasing concern about the safety of the Pfizer Inc. vaccine on elderly people with serious underlying health conditions after raising their estimate of the number who died after receiving inoculations to 29. Many speculate, I think with perhaps good reason, that the vaccine is the objective here, or one of the key, there's many objectives, this is one of the key objectives. Now, what it actually is interesting, because I think on, if you talk about a spectrum, on the one end, it could be just completely benign and just be designed to break down this idea of personal autonomy over your body, which was already damaged with the muzzles. So it's just benign. It's just to train the population, like Pavlov's dog, to be okay with the government injecting something into their arm. Then you could say it's an anti-fertility thing, and there's lots of information. There's lots of precedent for that. You know, Bill Gates and his wicked operations in Kenya and India and so on, rendering thousands infertile. And obviously they go on about population control the whole time. That's a key kind of elite theme. Or it could be something even more sinister, like a, you know, something that causes a death. Or even if you want to think things spiritually, leave seeing as it's produced, well, it's using tested on aborted cell linings, produced with aborted cell linings. If it's something demonic that leaves the recipient open to possession.
Well, yes, because there is a transhumanist element to this. And that's, of course, the Bill Gates' worldview. It's sort of a reductionist materialist view of everything, which ultimately explains why it's not going to work, because they don't have a full grasp of reality. But, you know, this whole issue of nanotechnology and the Internet of Things is just setting us up to be monitored, or a whole body. And there is talk of Bill Gates. They fantasize about having technology to monitor, you know, in real time, 24/7, our bodily functions, so they can tell us that we are sick, as opposed to us feeling sick. Then tell us we have to get our shots, our updates, our biannual or updates, you know, like we're a piece of software or something, operating system.
Surge of adrenaline when you see a rainbow flag, which indicates domestic terrorism tendencies or something.
Yeah. Something. Yeah, exactly. And they do, I mean, and this is all part of the Internet of Things and the 5G rollout. And of course, part of the whole virus thing could be cover for the, the effects of 5G, which and the, you know, electrical magnetic pollution that it's all around us. As these things ramp up further and further, more people are affected by it. That's something that people have monitored. Every time there's been a rollout of new communication with electricity, there's been like a pandemic, you know, and that's an interesting correlation that may perhaps be investigated further. But that Internet of Things is necessary for the full monitoring. And of course, in the past, the stuff was sort of rolled out, marketed by convenience or services, or, you know, whether it's better communications, downloading movies, better connectivity. Now they've done it with with a pandemic. We need it to trace everybody, and for that you need a barcode, or you need to be tagged, you know, more or less. Like, this is Mark of the Beast stuff going on here, and the same system was going to monitor how many credits you have within the new system, which is, and of course, how many credits you have will be determined by how well you behave, based on their rules. And this is openly talked about by Klaus Schwab, the World Economic Forum. The World Economic Forum, what they say is consequential. It isn't just some crazy cult out there. These are people who presume to run the world, and they have the power to run the world, evidently, because they're the ones that ordered the lockdown. So that what they say, what they suggest, people should take heed and take notice of, because it is important. So there's that. There's also this idea of vaccines, of health management, meaning that we don't really have, it's sick care, it's managed sick care, it isn't health care. We're not being, our health isn't being maintained or by these institutions. We're just being set up so we're constant customers, subjected to constant probing or pricking or something by the healthcare system. What they want is everyone getting, 60, 70, 80 injections, constantly being ill. So we're basically a source of downstream profits for the medical system. The vaccines create the downstream profits of the medical system because they create the long-term chronic illnesses, which enrich the healthcare system. So you have to see the healthcare system sort of as a harvesting system. Again, this requires people to have a completely altered view of things, how we relate to things. It's almost like how this past year has forced a lot of people to reconsider, reevaluate how we relate to our government and those who are supposed to represent us, or the economic system, or the laws and these things. Well, now we have to look at like how we relate to our insurance companies and the healthcare system. It's really being, the healthcare industry itself is being, it's controlled by malevolent financial figures who have spent 100 years indoctrinating us into believing that we need healthcare systems. And all goes back to the Rockefeller system and the Flexner Report and the weaponization of the germ theory, where now we're being told that, you know, we're at war with nature everywhere. There's germs everywhere. And it's not natural that we're exposed to these germs. In fact, we have to, you know, wage war on viruses, you know, which is ridiculous. Well,
yeah, it's almost this kind of Gnosticism where nature is bad.
And
author of nature is bad, and health is not the default which an omnibenevolent God would bestow on us, and would be the condition of a person when they have adequate nutrition and healthy lifestyle and so on, a spiritually healthy lifestyle as well. But instead, you've seen that for many years now. For example, the widespread take-up of the contraceptive pill, whereby a totally healthy woman actually ingests artificial hormones to disrupt a perfectly natural menstrual cycle and thereby increase her risks of breast cancer and so on.
And that's because called, that's called
nature as it's given is seen as bad.
And that's called reproductive health.
Yeah. Yeah, so a violation of nature is seen as managing good health.
Mm-hmm. But then she can be sexually liberated.
You know. Yeah, and lose her soul. Great.
Mm-hmm. And that goes back to all these ideas that were given, and this the false promises were given by the great deceiver. You know, is that this is that is happiness as opposed to, you know, what nature is. And you know, this whole idea that that overall health is dependent upon getting shots and being examined by experts all the time. Whereas if you look at history, the health revolution in the Western world was brought about by a better diet, increased public personal hygiene, development of infrastructure, these things. So it was plumbers and farmers that saved more lives than doctors, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the irony is with lockdowns, I mean, the biggest driver of disease historically has always been poverty.
Which they create through usury.
Which they create, yeah.
So often they're always, they masquerade as the fire department when they're the arsonists as well. Mm-hmm. Just and that so is the common theme you see all the time. It's like this inclusive capitalism thing. It's like, no, you were the ones that outsourced all the domestic industry and got women into the workforce to destroy the living wage and pumped spiritual and moral pollution into the culture. And now you're the one acting as though you have the solution to these problems you created.
Yeah. And without any regard, I mean, double the income by having women work. Okay, well, is that a good thing? What if the overall, you know, quality of life suffers because there's no one there maintaining hearth and home and raising the kids? Because because they both have to work. Then they're not having kids, and the whole consumption patterns change.
Mm-hmm.
There's sustainable moral ways to spend your money, and there's unsustainable ways to spend your money. Because if you're spending money on kids, that actually is regenerative. If you're spending money on just on consumer goods and vacations and more expensive cars or Harley Davidsons or jet skis, that's not regenerative because it's consumptive. You know, it's degenerative. And so there's, you know, they've through the promotion of consumerism, funded through usury, they've created a system that is unsustainable. Then they create this unsustainable system, then demand for a great reset, which is this dystopian transhumanistic nightmare, which if people were privy to what their ultimate fantasies are, something out of a horror film.
And which the Pope is arm in arm with them in, working with Lynn Forrester de Rothschild.
Yeah, talking about inclusive capitalism and signing on to sustainability, these things, this idea, environmentalism, you know, radical environmentalism, these things. Greta Thunberg, and again promoted by Klaus Schwab and the World Economic Forum. It's sort of a you know, a secular Joan of Arc of the Green Movement, you know.
They have their own communion of saints. They have their own doctrine. They have their heretics. They don't have any redemption.
And they have their own
But
they have their own sacraments, like
their
the
own sacraments,
vaccination, you know.
yeah. And the church, again, as we said, could have been a serious obstacle to this diabolical agenda, and actually a great evangelical opportunity to witness to the world that there is a supernatural force that stands up to this agenda and had a rich apostolic yield. Of course, it's fold. I mean, this degeneration of Western civilization, this disillusion is because of the lack of faith in the church. As goes the church, so the world. But you've seen the church basically sanction the pokey, and today or yesterday, the Pope allegedly received it, the Pope Emeritus as well. Bishop Schneider and I think four other bishops alone stood up and said, "No, I will not be guilty of the blood of innocents." There are two things to consider when assessing the licitness of a vaccine. One, is it moral? Two, is it necessary? He only commented on the first. We know the answer to the second: no, it's not necessary. But the answer to the first is that, you know, if there is grave moral proportionate reason when you're dealing with grave matter, if there is a distance, a remote distance from the original crime of the murder of the child in producing that vaccine, and if the need is grave enough, then one can receive the vaccine. That's Catholic teaching. He very clearly said no, the need is not great enough, and it is not remote enough. We would not have these vaccines if it were not for the murder of those children, period. And we need to be a witness to the world that this is unacceptable. That message, sadly, I know amongst many, even conservative Catholics, traditional Catholics, there's a lot of confusion, and some people who promoting the jab because they see it as their escape ticket, and they've bought into the whole psychological operation, the whole theater. But well, I'd be interested in your view of how to resist taking this. I mean, obviously, one just does not take it. Your health, you know, this is a moral principle, and also about protecting one's health. But operating in a world where having taken it is a prerequisite for traveling, having a job, maybe even purchasing food, etc., is not the stuff of overzealous theories or anything else. This is something we've got to think about.
Yeah, there has to be some serious pushback to this. Real consequences for those trying to enforce this, physical consequences, and that if it requires, you know, using force to defend yourself, that is obviously justified. One thing is, as they push harder for this, people have to start consider setting up parallel systems. Fine, you want to live in your, we'll have our own economy, and setting up those systems of support. There's a lot of resistance here in the States where, you know, you have hospitals where more than half the staff are refusing to take it, and so if you get that much resistance, they can't enforce it. It just melts away, disintegrates. So that's the one thing you see with all these supposed mandates is if people don't comply, they don't have the muscle to enforce it.
Yes,
You
and
know.
also we're living in the one is interacting with the dysfunctional and inefficient bureaucracy of late empire. And so I think that God will give us a way to kind of weave through, because, you know, oh, I've lost the letter, or that doctor gave it to that doctor, and the inefficiency really comes into play. In France, they've really struggled to have a mass program because it's so inefficient. One local GP says that they've received it, the other says they haven't. They're sending a letter there, they're ignoring it, they're at an old address. You know, all this other just human stuff, which the oligarchs don't really think about, comes into play.
Well, this is why they're rushing to I think, create the technical infrastructure for it, which I think the vaccine may play a part in. I mean, they want everything to be, that's why they want the cell phones and the contact tracing and the apps and all this. And they've, you know, they've conditioned people for this with all types of apps for shopping where, you know, if you want a discount, you have to download the app. So everything you buy is monitored now. And you know, a good example is I had a gas station that's free coffee for the month of January. But in order to get the free coffee, you have to download the app. You can't just walk in and get the free coffee. So somewhere big data knows how much coffee you're buying, at least has an idea of what you're buying. And that's the, you know, the function of digital currencies and digital, you want everything monitored. Everything is about being monitored, being rated, you know, everything is all about, it's all big data being souped up. And that's what, you know, Facebook, and that's what Twitter is all about. You know, that's why recently it's been a word that Twitter lost, or at least it was, was it 51 billion, Facebook and Twitter lost 51 billion in capitalization in this latest round of censorship. Everyone's saying, yeah, stick it to them. It says, well, the thing is, they're not really profitable companies. They're not designed, yes, to be profitable. They're set up to monitor, to get to absorb the data and impose the censorship, impose the mind control. And so the media in general, just like the media, think of it, they've taken a huge hit with ratings. You think if there was a network out there that actually reported hard news and actually investigated these things, they get higher ratings. And you get a little of that with our Fox network. I think it's Sky News where you are. But, you know, the Murdoch network, they're all part of it. But I'm saying it, the reason why they don't do it is because the media itself is a loss lead for the oligarchs. It's the main, it's a way to maintain the narrative, to maintain the mind control. And so although it may not make money as a business itself, ultimately it's profitable because it maintains the regime, systems of control over people's minds, which is you know, the ultimate way to control people. You have to mentally control them. You have to enslave their mind in order to enslave their bodies. Otherwise they rebel. And you will see that all around. It's just the willingness of most people to comply with the most absurd of regulations, or supposed regulations, their guidelines, you know. And so that's what we're seeing now. But yeah, thank you. Talk about incompetence and bureaucratic incompetence or inefficiency. You know, thank God we don't get all the government that we pay for. You know, it's, we do, in the end of the day, we can rely on incompetence to give us some freedom.
Just simple human error.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, it's with this vaccine agenda, it's managing, and health management is a big thing. The medical dictatorship is the best, is the most efficient dictatorship itself, because first of all, we feel vulnerable because we're not experts, and so it's a great cover for technocracy. And I've said this before, is although we're told that technocracy is ruled by experts, and you can see a certain crude logic to that. I don't agree with it, of course, but the reality is the technocrat himself is just a shill for the oligarch, which is, you know, which often is a college dropout like Bill Gates. So where's the technocratic, you know, expertise when they're just doing what Bill Gates wants, and you're just putting on a veneer of expertise or scientism to it and calling it science? A good example is that someone like an Anthony Fauci, who's just a bureaucratic con man posing as a doctor. You know, where any layperson can see that he's contradicted himself four or five, you know, different times on one particular matter. And what purpose or what use is an expert if he contradicts himself, or two experts contradict each other? So, you know, that's what you're facing, you know, with this, a lot of with this COVID stuff. They've been exposed for the buffoons that they are, you know, the incompetent people that they are. But they're great with politics. So, you know. And we've seen that with our Anthony Fauci. He's 40, 50 years in the bureaucracy, getting funding and grant money and dispensing grant money, building a little bureaucratic empire for the benefit of big pharma, you know, and the oligarchs.
And he understands symbols better than the bishops of the Catholic Church.
Yes.
He said the mosque is a symbol.
It's a symbol, yes. Yeah. And the tragedy with the church is the church has been converted to scientism, and they believe that science as retailed to the public is the ultimate claim on reality. You know, when the church itself, in the past, she would make that claim, and they say, oh no, we got to close down because the scientists say we have to close down. Well, any appreciation that perhaps the scientists don't have the church's best interest at heart, don't have the people's best interest at heart. You don't take politicians' words at face value, especially when they hate you. You know, I mean, in my state, we have a governor who, you know, openly proclaims the right to kill delivered babies.
Yeah.
You know, and so then also when he says the church that, you know, we would like for you to shut down. And it's important point is protect life. You might want to be a little skeptical about that because this guy is a devoted baby. He worships Baal, you know.
Yeah.
You know,
but this is where the problem is obviously theological and the fact that they're heretics. They don't believe that man is fallen. They have this a priori assumption, which is the basis of leftism, this anthropological optimism that man is basically good. And it's because they're sort of neo-modernists and they've absorbed thinkers like Karl Rahner and his very optimistic soteriology that basically after the that with the redemption everything was just covered by grace, so it's this confusion between grace and nature, and therefore the world is made up of Christians and anonymous Christians, and that the mission of the church is not to go and baptize to save souls but merely to render explicit what is already implicit to those souls. So the sacraments come basically a form of salvation theatre, and the auto-demolition of the church just becomes its kenosis, its kind of self-abasement for a kind of future resurrection or, you know, absorption into the zeitgeist, the world spirit or something. So, yeah, they're pretty gone on that.
Well, and, you know, with that outlook, it's not surprising that the bishops would agree with the governors that going to the church is inessential.
Of course, yeah, exactly. Why would they tolerate, you know, most people, well, most probably, most reception, most Holy Communions being sacrilegious?
Mm-hmm.
They don't believe that.
Yeah, we had our governor, we had a reported, I guess, spike in cases, mind you. People aren't sick, they're cases, because they're testing. The more you test, higher threshold, the more cases you get. Then he takes that bogus.
Symptoms.
Yeah, no symptoms. He takes the information to justify a further, you know, lockdown, which really isn't a lockdown. He uses language. His language is harsh, but the order itself is all contingent on you doing it voluntarily, which is funny because legally they can't really make you do this. But then
it's a bit harsher here, unfortunately.
Yeah. So we hear that. Yeah. We have the Bill of Rights. We have the First Amendment and the 14th Amendment and all types of things that supposedly protect us. Evidently they don't. But he said he blamed the uptick, which is, again, a case demic, on people going to church. Not people going shopping. Not people going, you know, to grocery stores, packing in groceries. No, it's people going to church. Then he said, why do this when you can just pray at home? You have a governor telling people, you know, you shouldn't go to church. You know, well, it's not surprising given who our governor is, you know, and the bishop should look at it and go, oh, yeah, our governor celebrates baby killing. Maybe we shouldn't take his advice on closing churches down. Just maybe be a little skeptical, maybe.
but if you look at the McCarrick case, the report that came out, which was a whitewash of any involvement, mm-hmm. of any culpability from Pope Francis or the Vatican, kind of heaped blame on John Paul II, etc. But and Vigano, interestingly. But they admit in that report that the FBI and the KGB had dirt on, knew about McCarrick's proclivities and had that over him as blackmail. So I think there we see an admitting of the mechanism, the control mechanism by which these politicians, these prelates, these scientists are controlled. If you think of that, why is it that Bishop Tobin makes a tweet about how Catholics cannot participate in Pride Month and then receives a lot of vitriol, but a lot of support as well, people saying, finally, a bishop standing up for the Catholic faith. And then the next day puts out a groveling kind of semi-apology. You know, clearly someone's had words with him there.
Yeah,
it's kind
yeah.
of Christian spirit is trying to get out, and then the pressure is then applied.
Well, that's, you know, a tragedy of some of these figures.
Sexual scandals in his diocese or whatever.
That's the tragedy of some of these figures, because I don't think these people are purely evil. They're men, and they're flawed.
Yeah.
And they may want to do good, but then they find themselves torn because they have, you know, their position, their brick and mortar operations, and wanting to do good, torn between being practical like all of us are confronted with these compromises, and they can be compromised in one degree or another. Some I think are purely evil. They've been infiltrated. This type of a compromise goes back. There is some speculation that that Cardinal Spellman was compromised, back in the 60s, and he supported the regime. Horst McCarrick, and I suspect that one of the reasons why the bishops here in the United States have been so weak is because they're compromised or being bribed or both. I think a lot of these dioceses are probably getting money under the table to keep their churches, their parishes, essentially shut down. So otherwise, what about the collection plates? But they're cutting the throats of their own parishes by maintaining the capacity restrictions, suspending all parish life, meaning activities and these things that give life, breathe life into a parish. Parish life wasn't strong going into this, pandemic because of 30, 40, 50 years of destroying ethnic neighborhoods. And suburbia wasn't a good environment for it anyway, which is another form of psychological warfare that they unleashed on the public. But they're at the end of the day, they're just part of the sort of, I think the hierarchy's part of this whole corporate monstrosity, which has been implicated in imposing this. The same reason why you think these are disparate actors, whether it's professional sports teams, entertainment corporations, they all signed on to this. Why is that?
Yes, that's what Austin Fitz really highlights. That the media wants to keep these things separate, but these are pillars of the same agenda.
Mm-hmm.
And the Epstein affair gives clear, hard evidence for how the control mechanism works.
Yeah, it's a brownstone. It's a brownstone operation.
Yeah, you get people to the parties. You slip something in the drink. You get them involved in some heinous activity. Take photographs. You've got them for life.
Yeah. And you can do this. Early on, as people are being groomed for political positions, you can find out who's willing to be compromised or compromise in the process. And the more compromised they are, the more they advance. A good example was like our Speaker of the House, Denny Hastert, was exposed as a sexual predator pedophile, not in a trial for that. It was over financial chicanery. He was paying someone off and he was withdrawing large amounts of money, and this in the process exposed this. And although he went to jail for that, he didn't go to jail for raping, teenager boys back in his days as a wrestling coach. But people say, well, how could a guy like this rise so far into the political, power structure? Well, he did. He rose that far because of that, not despite of it. And that's how, there's sort of a perverse, vetting system that can be set up for this. And an operation like Jeffrey Epstein is a good example of that, is all that bribery. And, that's been so much exposed when that story kind of was last year was exposed for some strange reason, because before that it was a wild conspiracy theory. Some say it has something to do with Ehud Barak and Benjamin Netanyahu, that he represented. Squabbling in Israel might have factored into it, exposure of Jeffrey Epstein. Catherine Austin Fitz says because since they passed FASB 56, when the federal budget went dark, they didn't need Jeffrey Epstein anymore, so he could be burned. So there's that. But
it's clumsy to allow such a thing. Even normies, what percentage of people genuinely believe Epstein committed suicide?
That was the funny thing.
It's just so open.
There was like, wait, for years people have called him a conspiracy theory. Now you're a conspiracy theorist, But you just accept that some of that important going to prison and be murdered? But what, isn't that against the law? Wouldn't we hear something? Wouldn't someone say something? But,
what happened in the Trow affair in Belgium in the 90s?
No one knows about the United States. You have to read Dave McGowan to know about the Trow affair. Thing. But yeah, that's one of these things that shows you how an entire political system can be co-opted.
But the Belgian people, have doubt and protested about and everything, but the system just came down hard and
yes.
they just ignored it. And so it just goes down the memory hole.
Yeah.
They always have that kind of last resort to just kill witnesses and just not talk about it.
It can just shut it down. Same way they shut down electoral fraud investigation in the United States. The system had decided something and it wasn't going to happen. And of course, it revealed itself to a lot of people. With Jeffrey Epstein, when this got out, it started exposing other realities of the system. One thing it did expose was Acosta, who was the U.S. attorney down there in Florida, who negotiated the sweetheart deal, because people don't realize it was the George W. Bush administration who put pressure on locals to back off Jeffrey Epstein and negotiate the sweetheart deal, because Jeffrey Epstein is known as being sort of being a Democrat, you know, a Democrat. And so it's sort of a Democratic scandal. But it was a George Bush administration put pressure on the DOJ, put pressure on local authorities to negotiate the sweetheart deal. And Acosta was the U.S. attorney down there who was involved in that. And what happened was when he was appointed Secretary of Labor for Trump, he was asked about it because it was making news at this point because of this lawsuit that was initiated by one of the victims, Virginia Roberts, I think it was her name. When he was being asked about it, he said, well, I was told to back off because Epstein belonged to intelligence. And what was telling about that is that when he said that, when that got out in the press didn't go, well, wait a second, what does that mean? They just said, okay.
Focus everything on finding out who told him that.
Yeah.
Who gave him those instructions?
What does that mean?
This organization. Yeah.
What intelligence? Was it the Mossad? Was it the CIA? Was it MI6? Well, turns out it could have been all of them. Could have been one of them. But the point is, you're suggesting that a major intelligence branch is involved in human trafficking. Now, why would they be involved in human trafficking? Well, one thing is human compromise, which is currency in sort of the bloodstream of politics. It's how you control people. One way you control people. But that wasn't asked, and there's no major news story about that. There was some reporting like in the Miami Herald, but it was all shut down. But I'm saying no one said, well, what does that mean? Wait a second. Belong to intelligence. And who has the power to shut down a U.S. attorney? I thought he's the chief. He's the big guy down there. Well, obviously, mm-hmm. there's a power structure above and beyond the legitimate, the overt political structure.
Yeah. And these might be people who we wouldn't even know of. You know, they might not be sort of famous people.
But this is what you do. When you start looking into these things, whether it's Jeffrey Epstein, which for a while was a conspiracy theory, or Marc Dutroux affair in Belgium, or, you know, the Finders case in Washington, D.C., or, you know, the Nebraska case, you know, with the Lawrence King, that was a Republican scandal back in the 80s and 90s. It's human trafficking operations, you know, and Craig Spence. And he commits suicide too, wasn't in jail, but he was about to be arrested. Is that these guys were involved in a compromise system, human compromise system, with houses, with set up for audio visual and these things. The Finders case was squashed because the CIA said it was a matter of intelligence, and that was a children human trafficking operation that was exposed in the 80s. So you know, if you look into this, and you see these things throughout history being quashed, and so then you start to identify the pattern, you know, and but no one ever makes the connection. It's they're treated as disparate events, unconnected, you know.
Yeah, and what's so chilling is that as sexual mores become more and more depraved, it's no longer enough to get dirt on a figure through, you know, getting them in a compromised position with some female prostitutes or male prostitutes, because that wouldn't be seen as
no, you got a
problem by society. So now it has to be with children.
You gotta you gotta kill the girl or have it with the child, you know. You know, so it gets worse.
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
but I think the Dutroux affair is the clearest case in the world where you can just look into it. Just even the Wikipedia page.
Yeah, I know.
And the normie can get like a red pill lodged in their throats.
Why was he given a pension? Unemployed electrician given a pension and unlimited prescription to Rohypnol or something. It's a date rape drug.
And 30 people had mysterious deaths. 30 people in connection with the case, like witnesses and so on.
Yeah, that goes all the way into the structure, into the hierarchy of NATO.
Yeah, I think that's Belgium. That's why it's interesting. And also strange movements with Saudi banks moving, transacting to Dutroux's account.
Mm-hmm.
Belgium seems to be that as part of that European Supreme Command, NATO, EU power structure there.
And you have the Camp Bond
deal. It's like giving an aperture into the control system of the kind of American empire or, you know, EU,
and then
in that.
You have the various scandals with contractors and in the Balkans and that war that NATO created in the 90s, the destruction of Yugoslavia, that U.S. government played just a big part and actually paid for it. They actually paid people to secede from Belgrade. But this creates an arena for drug trafficking, human trafficking, arms dealing. It's all these dirty wars create an arena for all the sort of profiteering at the expense of human misery. And it develops its own little logic almost. And you have that human trafficking and all those women that are being shipped from Eastern Europe, these, you know, blonde European looking women that are, get such a high price in the market and they're desperate and it's very easy to bring them in under the guise of modeling contracts and all of a sudden they're enslaved into the human trafficking system. And a lot of Western contracting companies that names are familiar with were implicated in that.
I mean, it's interesting. I think there was a point made, I remember, that people look at, I mean, George Soros seems to be a figure that one is allowed to criticize,
mm-hmm.
in the sort of mainstream right, even. Although Gingrich got shut down for mention, but it does seem to be allowed, at least in some sectors.
But
perhaps he is the fall guy because he's been working for the last few decades hand in glove with the National Endowment for Democracy.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't remember who it was, but maybe it was a CIA director or assistant director in the 80s who said, what we did before the church hearings, we now do through front groups. And the NED is a CIA front group.
So the
migration, when we're thinking it's not what Soros is doing, importing Mohammedans, mass immigration into Europe, it's what the CIA is doing. And so this theory runs that Soros, the CIA are importing a civil war into Europe, which they can detonate whenever those provinces of the American Empire get uppity.
Mm-hmm.
So if Germany, for example, under Schroeder was getting quite cozy with Russia, with Gerhard Schroeder looking at Gazprom pipelines with Russia, that's basically an economic marriage made in heaven with the German industrial know-how and expertise combined with the Russian commodity market and the transport links to China, potentially. If you had a unification of the Eurasian land mass and an end of the dollar system, that would be the end of the American empire and the debt-based lifestyle you enjoy over there.
Mm-hmm.
So this is something that needs to be preempted and kept on top of. And so that's when you started to see in the mid-2000s a lot of Fox News coverage for things like the Five Star Movement in Italy or the UKIP party in England, and a lot of agitation, at least from the right wing of the American deep state towards the EU.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a wilderness of mirrors, as John Jesus Angleton said about the Cold War.
Yeah, and that you're talking about the Mackinder Doctrine, where that seems to disrupt this idea of the sea power containing and controlling the land power. And if you get a German-Russia-German condominium, that undermines the whole, you know, control of the world, which goes back to that currency war that I talked about, which I think ultimately sparked the pandemic. And you have to go back, when you say CIA, what is CIA? What is MI6? What are these intelligence agencies? These services all developed out of the banking systems, the financial systems that developed out of the opium wars, you know, and so it's all about controlling the world. And so, you know, it's Skull and Bones. It's Cambridge, that, you know, not Cambridge, but, the outfit that, that Caesar Rhodes set up, you know, the Rhodes Scholarship, this thing, it's all about, yeah, control. And, you know, the people are indoctrinated to sort of accept this view of the world, of governing the world. And so when you say these agencies, they're agencies for somebody. They're agencies for the financial interests that created them. And that's the best way to phrase it, I guess. And it's about managing the world and expanding global markets as they see it. And so nationalism, patriotism, these things, local cultures, these things are obstructions to them, to their market, to their business plan, you know. And this is why you see this whole, the global homo thing is the best way to describe it, because not only does it incorporate the importance of sort of the degenerate sexual culture they need to promote, but also the idea of making everything the same in the name of diversity, you know.
Yeah, it's got that useful dual meaning, hasn't it?
Yeah.
But I don't think, you know, we need to necessarily answer to identify the head of the snake, the octopus itself. I mean, we could speculate and that can be useful, but we're just asking, you know, who gave the order to the Florida Attorney General to lay off Epstein?
Yeah, the fact that you can't get that answer.
Exactly, yeah, that's the thing. So, I mean, the church once had cognizance of covert warfare and of secret societies. The Freemasons are the subject, I think, of more papal condemnations than any other entity. Obviously, this ended with the concordat with the modern world that the church signed at Vatican II, effectively. But I think now the role, the subversive role of secret societies, of Freemasonry, is now achieved through intelligence agencies and foundations. I think they have taken the role of the secret societies now. They are the chief enemy, I think.
Yeah, I think it's the Masons, the Freemasonry was basically successful in reshaping the world in its image.
Right.
The whole world is now one lodge. And so one of the criticisms that Vigano has, E. Michael Jones has made this criticism, is, you know, when he blames Freemasons for this stuff, he's being a little too mystical and perhaps avoiding the topic of the Jews, because it's hard, very hard politically to criticize Jewish power, because the Jews control the narrative or public discourse by accusing any criticism of them as being anti-Semitic. And there's this weird, I don't know to what point is, who's really at the top of the power structure? You know, is it particularly Jewish, or is it a combination of factions? I frankly don't know.
Ultimately, it's the prince of this world.
Yes.
The liar from the beginning. It's like a hydra. There are lots of heads, lots of factions, and they bite each other. You know, they're always fighting, as we've talked about these. The kind of machinations of American deep state. But then when the Catholic Church is in their eyes of sight, then they all converge and they stop fighting and they focus their attack on.
Yeah, it's probably like the five families of New York, you know, the mobster family getting together and organizing. There's going to be occasional wars between them. But one of the problems of the modern Catholic Church now is its inability unwillingness to address Jewish power. Which is primarily responsible for sort of the moral degeneration of the West, and if the Church sees itself as primary mission is fighting moral corruption, and maintaining the moral order, it can't it can't hide away or refuse to acknowledge those agents that are the primary force for moral degeneration, moral corruption. And so, you know, if the Church is worried about constantly worrying about the Holocaust or anti-Semitism, it's not going to be in a position to criticize Jewish organizations that are promoting abortion. promoting homosexuality,
promoting
transgenderism. And so that's the problem with it. It doesn't have the it can't develop the rhetoric to effectively fight that cultural battle. And we see that now because it no longer even seeks to even convert the Jews.
Yeah, and this is where, Pope Benedict, who is held up as this sort of some kind of conservative figure, really wasn't. I do take what you say, but I also think that, okay, the church could point out the Jewish disproportionate influence in pornography, for example.
Mm-hmm.
How about she just actually condemns pornography? You know, yeah. first of all, that unequivocally, categorically needs to be condemned repeatedly to the world rather than focusing, as they are at the moment, on climate change and refugees and so on.
Yes.
This is a problem that is just so wide and deep, ultimately, with theological roots. But Tim, it's been a great conversation. Before you go, I did really want to get your thoughts on this great Twitter purge, because I mean, if you look at the Capital Instant, through one lens, is it a kind of Charlottesville 2.0, this sort of dragnet, this FBI dragnet, where agent provocateur, possibly special forces in the crowd, someone was alleging that there are special forces there. It's led, as we've seen, to the labeling. As John Rapoport said, it's about creating a big equals sign.
Mm-hmm.
So the rioters in the Capital equals white supremacists, equals domestic terrorists, equals Trump enablers, equals vaccine skeptics, equals pro-lifers. And you can just lump all of these people together into as a scapegoat group and then have the justification to purge Twitter. And it was quite chilling to see how quickly Parler as an alternative was shut down. And obviously within a color revolution, the first thing you see in a communist takeover is the cutting of communications.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, yeah, when you have a coup, you seize a radio station or TV station, right? You control communications. Yeah. And so you saw this. It's bizarre, it's so obvious. It's so over the top that it's people, I think at one point they're kind of shocked by it. But it shows how desperate and weak. This isn't a sign of a regime that's in ascendancy. It's a desperate move to shut things down because they can't control the narrative. But as far as the events on January 26th being set up as a Charlottesville 2.0, generally speaking, yes, I think that's what occurred. I mean, Charlottesville, you had a Unite the Right rally in Charlottesville. They had a permit. They had speakers there to speak out against the removal of Confederate statues from a southern Confederate city like Charlottesville. It's the heart of the Confederacy was Virginia. And they were just scheduled to give speeches against it. And then Antifa came in. They were bussed in. Apparently, they were set up by the local government there, the Charlottesville government. The mayor was a Jewish guy, a carpetbagger from New York. The police chief eventually had to resign for his how he handled it. But there was a report about it called the Heffy Report, which blamed the city for setting up that riot. So they were set up for it. Then you have the lawfare that ensues afterwards with Roberta Kaplan, the lady that Michael Jones talks about, who's funded by a lot of these, like the ADL and Southern Poverty Law Center and other Jewish wealthy people. They fund her to wage lawfare against penniless activists. And the legal system tolerates this, by the way. That's another thing. This sort of malicious pursuit is tolerated by the legal system. But they have the media spin on it. Where, remember, Donald Trump said that good people on both sides, and they accused him of defending Nazis. And even Joe Biden repeated that accusation, and he completely distorts what happened in Charlottesville. Not that he's held accountable for that distortion, but the media spin went out that these were neo-Nazis marching on Charlottesville, when actuality was just they had the permit, Antifa didn't, the police didn't handle the crowd properly. In fact, they seemed to intentionally set up a conflict. At the end of the day, the people who were there who had the permit were prosecuted more aggressively than the Antifa disruptors who didn't have a permit. But the eyes of the media, it was like, look how these extremist white right supremacists are acting. That was a complete distortion of the event. Well, same thing with the January 6th event, where you had huge rally, hundreds of thousands of people came out in support of Donald Trump against electoral fraud. a really impressive demonstration, which you would think, which by the way, wasn't really covered by our media. Anything else that big would have been wall-to-wall coverage. Just wasn't really talked about. But then, you had a few thousand surround the Capitol, walk up to it, a few hundred let in. There's some, some hijinks, nothing really serious. Unfortunately, because of some trigger-happy security personnel, one lady was shot, reportedly. You had three people die of medical causes. I don't know what that is. And reportedly, one Capitol Hill policeman died from damage, from head injury, or from what I understand, allegedly from a fire extinguisher. I don't know what that means. But then this has turned into an insurrection, a riot. You know, and all those.
When I was following it on the BBC website, I've never seen such a large font used on the website. It was like size 84. A deadly invasion of the Capitol or something. It may seem as if this mob had gone into the Capitol and just massacred Congress people.
Yeah, and I saw a news report about a special report about Jewish lawmakers being terrified. As if this was a unique experience. That's about the Jewish lawmakers. Like, geez, really? I mean, you know. But anyway, so this has turned into this, an insurrection. And actually, they're trying to prosecute people based on that. That this is a sedition. It's an insurrection. They're terrorists and these things. And it's funny because most people walked away at like 5 p.m. It was over with. I don't know what type of insurrection ends at 5 p.m. But they walked away and they were able to resume business and certify Joe Biden's bogus election and get on with business. But it's been portrayed now that you get this
in the morning.
Three fifty in the morning. Witching hour. You know, when supposedly this was supposed to be debated and Pence promised that we'd hear the evidence. And of course, that would just ended. They couldn't, resume the debate again. You can't have that anymore. So it's completely spun into something that it wasn't. And this is the effect of creating a false narrative. And now it's being the basis for like legal cases against hundreds of the participants in this thing. When in actuality, the best they can be charged with maybe is breaking a window here and there. Which, by the way, probably the ones that did break windows were probably, the agent provocateurs.
And it is a public building.
It belongs to the people.
It's not like private property that's being destroyed by Antifa.
Say it was stormed when you have videotapes of guards waving them in, and then the people who stormed it, politely walk the aisles with the roped off, their velvet ropes, roped off rope lanes, and they went into the rotunda, which is public. A few went off into the offices, which made news, where the guy put his feet up on Nancy Pelosi's desk. But listen, in the past, there have been other protests. We have a group called Code Pink, which regularly storms the Capitol, gets in the hearings, marches into people's offices without any authorization and protest. We've had, the Capitol shut down, Senate buildings seized by protesters during Supreme Court nomination hearings. All this is celebrated. It's various
state capitals. With Kavanaugh, didn't it?
Kavanaugh, yeah, and it was celebrated, and of course, then just to, then it, when that you have to have this histrionic reaction to this event. Just a few months before, we were being told that the Black Lives Antifa riots were peaceful protests, and that apparently the $2 billion in property damage and the 2,000 cops and the dozens of people who died in those peaceful protests don't count for much. But we were being told that those things were justified. And so, again, the public is being forced to swallow this rank hypocrisy. It's astonishing.
It does beg a belief. I think it is interesting. However much of an op it was, however much it was theatre, you were seeing ludicrous images of Congressmen and women. We're putting on these bizarre kind of gas masks and just the fear and the panic, I think is quite telling that the devil is cowardly.
Yeah.
That as soon as you show any, these are small souled people. And as soon as you show any kind of spirit, as much as that might have been artificial and anything else, but nevertheless, as soon as you show a little bit of pushback, they just scatter.
Yeah.
You know, they really can't. Satan sits on a throne of smoke.
And then they have to tell these horroring stories to justify their cowardice. You know.
Right. Yeah. But ultimately, they are cowardly.
Yeah.
They are cowardly, and I think that lesson should be remembered.
And just the attitude that, as if people have no legitimate reason to have an insurrection. Meaning, here we have a stolen election. Okay, you have all these laws being broken, completely ignored by the courts, by the state legislatures, and evidently by the Congress itself. Not to mention an entire year where people's lives have been destroyed, their livelihood, they've been deprived of livelihoods, their businesses have been shut down, they've been driven trillions of dollars in the debt. And this goes to this speaks to all the state capitals, by the way, who may experience similar uprisings or protests. They're acting as if they've done nothing that warrants any reaction by the part of the public. And how dare taxpayers enter into the buildings that they pay for? I mean, we should have to get that close to these people. How else are people, when they apparently have no redress, the courts don't listen to them. The congressmen don't listen to them. Not like they can walk in and make an appointment with them because they can't write a $50,000 check. Or, you know, the media's not covering it. So what other outlet do they have? What other outlet did you have? And so I think some of it was, the amount of people that showed up, I think, was the demonstration. The people that walked into the Capitol, walked up to the Capitol, you think that would make some impression upon the legislature. It doesn't. They doubled down. Nancy Pelosi has built a wall now around Capitol Hill. They need thousands of troops to protect them from the people that supposedly support them. You know, like I said, you need 20,000 troops to provide security for the inauguration of one of the most popular presidential candidate ever. I mean,
but white supremacy is the number one threat to homeland security. So.
Yeah, as if the people that supported Donald Trump are supremacists. These are the people who's actually seen their life expectancy decline. Okay, mm-hmm. Their job prospects are gone. The mills are shut down. The drug addiction is soaring. These are supremacists. And then Bill. Joe Biden says that we have to build back better, open up the economy, and they're going to emphasize helping women-owned minority businesses. You know, it's like, really? Okay. You know, that's the emphasis. But
these kind of events are quite telling. They can be watershed moments.
Yes.
For example, the reaction of the sort of commentariat in the days following is you get all the kind of untrustworthy actors showing their true colors often. So you had a lot of so-called conservative figures basically cucking and who had been maybe questioning the election legitimacy were then suddenly repeating leftist talking points about gullible Trump supporters and conspiracy theories and incitement of violence. They might have admitted the existence of some fraudulent votes, but certainly not enough to sway an election. And you saw that with in Catholic media circles as well. So it's quite interesting to just then be able to get a clearer picture, to be able to map where these figures are and what their, you know, true positions are.
Well, they have their positions within, you know, within the regime.
Yeah. You know,
and they're happy with it. I mean, if you look at it, all the congressmen, I read an article that talked about this. It was Thomas Dalton. I think that's his nom de plume. He talked about how what was striking was how all the reaction of the congressmen were all the same from both sides of the aisle to the protest. Not one word of support for the protesters. None of them were willing to consider that the protests had any legitimate grievance or reason to march up and let their feelings known to the Congress. It's because the congressmen represent all the same interests, right and left. They all represent corporations. They all represent high finance. They all do very well by the current system. So, you know, they're in power. They're rich. It's done very well by them. They all represent, they all represent the same banking interests, the Zionist interests, these things, the system itself. And so that's the problem. And he said that instead of focusing on what separates Democrats from Republicans, the American people have to focus on what unites them. And that's where you start to recognize, the real problem. What unites these people? What are their interests?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Don't sort of look at them a priori as public servants.
Have you seen the debates?
I mean, well,
I'm obviously someone like a Nancy Pelosi is easy to criticize. There's you hear in their arguments, they're praising Donald Trump's accomplishments in defending him in the impeachment trial. And one of the accomplishments is that Donald Trump moved the U.S. embassy to Jerusalem. Yes, that's I'm sure the American people cheered when that happened. I was like. I love that.
If you don't like it, go start your own social media platform.
Well, it's getting to the point where you don't like it.
which then shut down.
Yeah, go. If you don't like it, go start your own platform. If you don't like it, go start your own internet. If you don't like it, what's getting to the point where you don't like it, go start your own country.
Yeah.
And they may get that, actually. With and may come to that. So.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I really disagree with these kind of accelerationist arguments. But I did see something that was kind of saying that maybe, they go ahead and impeach Trump, but, stealing election, this scandemic, rubbing it in the faces of tens of millions, in a sense, can have a better outcome, or God can use it to a better purpose, shall we say, rather than Trump winning and then this kind of monitoring of the situation, this kind of steady decline for the next four more years. I don't know if there's any concluding points you'd like to finish on, Tim.
Well, this past year, as these events have unfolded and things have been revealed, at least they've become clearer, it may seem like right now the hour of maximum peril, but it's also the hour of maximum opportunity for the very reasons you just stated. There's a moment of clarity for a lot of people. The beast system has revealed itself to tens of millions of more people now. And at the very least, not many people are aware of the problem now, and they're getting closer to identifying what the problem is. And you really can't really solve your problem until you identify what the problem is. And this has afforded, I think, a lot of people, humanity, an opportunity to have an effective response. And there's hope in that,
And for me, this year or last year has shown that we should be entering the mystery of Nazareth, whether it's working at something quietly, honoring God, raising children in wisdom and truth, know that this world is passing away, and to not see the system necessarily as something one can necessarily affect, but what one can affect is to cultivate a holy home, holy family, and then in turn, look to cultivate local community, alternative economies, as you said, food production, and really disengage from the beast system.
Well, those are just obvious threats to the beast system. This is why everything they do is dedicated to destroying those independent means of support, networking. Destroying, a civil society, these things, disrupting normal family patterns and family formation and corrupting everyone's sexual mores, because that ultimately is the root. That's the basis for civilization. And they're seeking to just, the fact that they focus so much energy on destroying that means that those things, that itself is a real threat to their ambitions.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Okay, Tim, it's been a pleasure and very elucidating. Thank you, as always, for your incisive analysis.
Oh, you're certainly welcome.